Welcome back, folks. As I said in the open this morning, I've got really one of my favorite people. There are three people that I read every day, and this gentleman is one of them. And he has this thing called Jewback Picks, which is really tremendous. But and he has an alert, and he's really, in my personal opinion, I would call him the thinking man's financial journalist, because some of the ideas he presents, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I wish I'd have thought of it. And so I think you're really going to enjoy the show. We're fortunate this morning to have Jim Jewback with us. As I said earlier, Jim has been writing about the capital markets for more than 25 years, including 12 years at MSN Money, where Nielsen's net ratings ranked him the number one most read investor columnist on the web. In March of 2010, he was awarded the Best in Business Award by the Society of American Business Editors and Writers, and we are fortunate to have him on the show today. Jim, welcome back to the show. Thank you for being on.
I'm not sure I can live up to that.
I tell you, no, I love reading you. I mean, frankly, I was reading you yesterday, and you know, you had as your, I guess, your graphic, this bucket of money. It reminded me of that famous picture that we've all seen during the German hyperinflation back in the 30s of that person, you know, with that bucket full of Deutschmarks. I thought, this is really, really clever. But
yeah, and going to buy a loaf of bread with their
loaf of bread or something like that. And so in fact, I wanted to ask you, where did you get that graphic? That's a great graphic. I mean, that was tremendous.
Somewhere in the cloud.
Somewhere in the cloud, somewhere. So, yeah. But I really want to start the article that I really liked that you wrote recently, because we'll ease our way into the depth of the articles. You wrote a really great one called How the Great Recession Changed Us. And, well, and I like to talk about that a little bit. Are we in a great recession now?
Well, I mean, clearly, you know, this is, I mean, if you look at a chart that compares this to any of the recessions since the Great Depression, this one has been deeper, but also longer. I mean, that's really the major difference, that we haven't had the kind of V-shaped recovery that you get after the typical business cycle recession. We've had a very long period of scraping along. We're still at, what, a little over 8% unemployment officially. Unofficial, you know, the full unemployment number is more like 15. If you look at demographics and you break that down and look at the effect of unemployment on younger workers, it's even higher. This is a great recession.
Yeah, in fact, I saw a chart the other day that said, for males in their prime working years, like 18 to 56, our unemployment might reach as high as 25%. Do you believe that?
Well, I think that's probably a little high. I mean, if you say might, you know, we're guessing. I mean, one of the things that's happening right now is that it's going, you know, the recession is dragging on for so long. You've got people who have been unemployed for, you know, a considerable length of time, and all the research suggests that people who have been unemployed for a year or more start to suffer from, you know, their skills start to atrophy, that the marketplace for jobs keeps moving, but these people by and large aren't. And it's especially a problem right now because we've also, in the middle of this, cut our spending on community colleges so that, you know, workers who want to keep up with their skills if they're unemployed don't have as much of a cheap alternative to do that.
Well, let's hope it improves, but I don't think it's going to improve by election time. I think we're still going to have that come election time.
So I think the likelihood is that, you know, we might see some improvement, but, you know, I mean, is it really going to feel better to a whole lot of people if we're at, you know, 7.9 as opposed to 8.1% unemployment? I think for people's, you know, real life experience, that's essentially the same.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Now, you were talking, we've only got about a minute and a half, so we'll get into this and come on the other side of the break. You were talking about some of the post-recession worries, and you said one of the big changes, of course, is consumer spending, consumer purchasing. And then you have a second one, which is what is it, views, changes about work and the nature of a career. And the third one is the way the Great Recession has undermined our existing belief in financial security. Let's take that last one first. I mean,
well, that's
people
the one
are really
– that's the one you were talking about before I came on. Yeah, I heard you.
Yeah, people are very depressed about what's going on. It's hard to find good news
and
you've been around for 25 years. What do you think about this?
Well, the thing that is really, I think, depressing about this recession is that if you contrast it to, you know, 1935 or so, you know, where we came out of the Great Depression having added security to the economic system. We had Social Security. I mean, now we're looking at you know, real questions in people's minds whether that system is going to survive. I happen to disagree with you. I think it will. But, you know, the whole 401k thing that people put so much hope in has proven to be, you know, a disaster over the last, 10 years or so. We've had a number of bear markets. So I think that's eating away at people's sense of where they're going to be in 10, 20, 30 years.
Okay, well, let's talk about when you get back, because I'd like to know how it will. I hope I'm wrong, and I'm not Bill O'Reilly, so I'd love to hear how this thing is going to last. So this is not going to be a point-counterpoint. I'm really interested in that. So when we come back, we're talking with Jim Joubak today, and we're going to be talking about, is Social Security going to last? You're listening to Mike Robinson, Straight Talk Money, Business 1110 KTK. Back to you in just a moment, folks. Good morning, folks. If you're just joining us, we have with us today really one of my favorite financial columnists. I read him every day he comes out. It's one of the few. There are only three that I read consistently, and Jim Joubak is one of them. Jim has been writing about the capital markets for more than 25 years, including 12 years at MSN Money. Nielsen Net Ratings ranked him the number one most read investor columnist on the web. And in March of 2010, he was awarded the Best in Business Award. So we have a great show today. And just before we left, Jim mentioned that he thought Social Security was going to last, which is something that I really came to the conclusion that it would not. So I'm very interested to hear this because I have sons 28 and 25, Jim, and I'd like to be hopeful that they're going to have something in the kitty. How do you think we're going to get there?
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at the projections, it's clear that if Social Security is not going to last, it's because we decide that it doesn't last, that, you know, fixing the problem really for the short term, you know, like the next 10, 15 years requires nothing more complicated than, raising, lowering, whatever, changing the limit on where the taxes phase out. So the people who make more money would wind up paying, you know, into the kitty a little longer, as their income goes up. That's the kind of fix that you need to get through the next, say, 15 years. You know, that doesn't get your kids, mine are even younger than yours, that doesn't get your kids to retirement, gets, you know, you and me to Social Security, probably. But, you know, the real issue is that, you know, that Social Security was put in as a kind of stopgap safety net measure, and it's certainly not enough for people to, you know, retire on. It's good to have, but it's not all that you need to retire on. It's the other stuff that I think is in much more danger. I mean, if you think the government is going to go looking for tax revenue and budget cuts, you know, I would look at 401ks before I'd worry about Social Security, because I go, as Willie Sutton says, that you rob banks because that's where the money is.
That's where the money is, right.
Yeah, so, you know, putting some kind of tax on 401ks, you know, a lot easier way to raise money than I think doing anything about Social Security. And then you've got all the city and state pensions that are, that are clearly, paper pyramids. And, you know, we haven't put enough money into them. They're not going to be there for those workers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to talk about state pensions. We've got a caller on the line, and I'd like to go to the caller first. Gene, welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks. yes, your guest is describing all the symptoms of the current economy, which I agree, but isn't the root cause the policy coming out of the White House? I mean, if there's no improvement occurring, can't you attribute it to the CEO of the country? And whether it's Obama hanging over one's head or just profligate spending, aren't these the real issues? And what's the forecast of improvement if we want to follow the path of Europe and Greece?
Well, you know, you separate the problem into two things. One is you had, you had the sort of huge crash in the economy after Lehman, AIG, et cetera, and we produced a half-assed stimulus package that was too small and badly designed, and it didn't do the job that needed to be done. That was then. Now your problem really is that you're facing, that lingering hangover, as well as, all the stuff that was going on before that. You still got an aging population that where the number of workers is declining. You've still got, global competition. And if we're looking at places where I think we're really our leaders have let the country down, and I put leaders in both parties into this. I mean, we're essentially in gridlock in Washington. We're not doing anything. I would think it's tackling the longer-term problems that are the problem. If we look at Greece, Greece's real problem, the reason I don't think Greece is viable is not because they're so much in debt, but because the Greek economy is so uncompetitive on a global basis. You can't really solve your problems if you don't have productivity growth, if you're not creating any wealth. I mean, all of those things that we could be putting in place to help with this problem, we haven't done.
Yeah, well, I have to disagree with you when you say gridlock.
Of course, I knew you would.
I think gridlock is great. If we could have had gridlock, we would have never had Obamacare. If we would have had taken the signs of dealing with Social Security when Bush recommended it, we would have been on this problem 10 years ago. So I do think that there are some issues with more people on the receiving end of benefits than on the creation side. And as an entrepreneur, how are you going to move forward when there's so much trepidation with how you're being punished for being successful? So why?
Well, I'm an entrepreneur, and I don't feel like I'm being punished for being successful. I think I'm being punished by having the economy and the stock market not do very well, which makes it hard to raise money and hard to get people to open their wallets to do anything. That, I think, is the bigger problem. I don't think the distribution of wealth is I think it's a canard. I think it's a false issue that is not really addressing our problems right now. I think we really need to look at how you get the economy growing. And I don't think the issue of I'm an entrepreneur, I don't believe I'm being punished. That's not what's stopping me from doing things.
Well, you must be Bill Gates, who's not affected by this, because
Bill Gates is now not an entrepreneur anymore, and I don't work for Bill Gates.
Yeah.
I work for myself.
Well,
thank you,
Mike. Mike made a comment before you got on about the letting some things just die that need to die, whether it's let there be a real estate crash that just works itself out, or interest rates being kept artificially low, or just a number of things that are not being allowed to happen. Maybe GM should have just gone the route of just filing bankruptcy and then reorganizing. So a lot of the things that are being done, I think government has gotten in the way of letting things happen. And unfortunately, they're not an asset. They're trying to create Solyndra, an economy, and making bets on companies and technologies when they should just they create nothing. They just take revenue. And so I think that.
Well, you're profoundly disagree on history, I think. More
okay, all right.
Wait,
I think we determined that we disagree. So I think we if we've covered everything, and we answered your question. Has Jim answered your question? Thank you. I guess we have. Hey, Jim, let's move on. What do you think of it? You've had several articles lately that kind of alluded to a couple of things. I'm just going to ask you some straight questions. What do you think of interest rates? As we all know, Japan's been at zero rates for almost two decades. It hasn't helped stimulate the economy. We're down at zero interest rates practically, and it's not stimulating our economy. And everybody is just waiting for the Federal Reserve to do something wonderful today. Do you think they should do some other QE3 or another twist? Where do you think interest rates are going?
If the Fed moves today, it has zero to do with the U.S. economy. It has to do with trying to put some hope into the global financial markets. So if we get an operational twist, It's not going to do anything for U.S. growth. It might, help stave off another step down into panic in Europe, and I think that has some benefit. But let's be realistic. Operation Twist has not had much effect on the U.S. economy. The Fed increasingly has less and less that it can do to stimulate growth. That's not where the problem lies at the moment.
No, and I agree. And actually, the other ones haven't worked either, so I don't think this is going to work at all.
Well,
do you think we're going to be at
you get diminishing returns after a certain point, and I think we're at that
point.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's like that fifth bite of ice cream. The first couple are really good, but after a while, you're just eating something cold.
I'm usually
– what do you think?
That's my second pint, frankly.
Hey, do you think interest rates are going to stay down here for a while? I was at a conference a couple weeks ago.
They're not going anywhere. The Fed said the end of 2014, at the current
level. And I think that's early.
I think we're not looking at it coming up before that, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. We were talking about pensions, and you and the caller made a, there's some interesting conversation out of that, because if you look at pension fund managers, their whole thing is to keep the current population of employees happy by not taking 2 months out of their payroll, and yet the guy who's going to retire, he needs as much money put in as possible just by everybody else but him. How is this pension system going to play itself out? Because
I think you need to go back like two steps earlier. That the problem is not the pension managers. It's not the workers. It's the politicians were sitting there and going, okay, so yes, we're going to we really like to save money on a raise, so we're not going to give you a raise, but we're going to guarantee you more pensions. And the way we're going to do this is we're not going to really raise any money. We're not going to put any extra money in there. We're going to raise our assumptions about the rate of return on our pension fund. You've got pension funds sitting out there that are assuming they're going to make 8% in low-risk investments. This is completely, as far as accounting goes, this is a charade. And it was all about, getting, it's the inevitable political thing of you try to get something and not pay for it. And what they were trying to do was make promises, and they didn't fund it. And now it's all coming home.
Absolutely. As Roger Lowenstein said in his book, While America Aids, he said, pensions are a perfect vehicle for procrastination.
Yeah.
And they truly are. So,
especially when you're mixing politics. It's hard enough to do if you do honest accounting, but if you're incentivized to do dishonest accounting, the game is pretty much over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't have you on very long, and so I'm going to switch to the equity market now, because one of your favorite things that I get from you is what called Jubac picks. And so I want to take this 2 point. First of all, explain to the folks out there what your Jubac picks is, and then let's talk a little bit about what your thoughts are on the equity side of the market.
Well, I run a number of portfolios, hypothetical portfolios, but it's real trades, real prices, and all that on the site, which is JubacPicks.com. Just check it out. Put your browser. It's free. You can get access to the portfolios. So there's a 12 to 18 month. There's a dividend portfolio. There's a long term, 5 to 10 years, and we try to track those. It's a really really hard market. I'm more than anything else, I guess, a stock picker, and this is a bad market for stock picking, because stock picking right now doesn't matter. Good companies, bad companies. They're getting if you've got fear on, fear off, the whole macro trend moves, and good stocks go down as well as bad stocks. So it's a very, very tough market. I think if we can get some, not resolution in Europe, but a sense that it's not all going down the rat hole tomorrow, and we get some bottom in the declining Chinese growth rate. It doesn't have to go up. It just has to basically, we need to know where the bottom is. Or is the bottom 7.5 or 7 or 8% growth? If we can do those two things, I think there's a chance that we can go back to an era where if you cared about earnings, you found companies with good earnings, it mattered. Maybe the second half of the year, if we're lucky. Maybe early 2013.
Are you looking for a good market ahead?
I'm looking for, you know, what I'm trying to do right now is if there's a single overarching strategy, what I'd like to do is to find good companies that pay a dividend so that even if I'm early, I'm collecting. And, you know, one of the things with this volatility is that you can sometimes find a good company with a good dividend and it's been slammed on the short term because everything has been slammed. So if you can find something that's paying 4 or 5%, you know, when 10-year treasuries are paying under 2, that seems like a good part of the equity market to look at.
Okay, and I know I'm bouncing all over the place, but I have a short time with you. Are you any concerns about the J.P. Morgan situation?
You know, I mean, not J.P. Morgan particularly, but I think symptomatically, yes. You know, what basically you had is a part of the bank that was run conservatively as a kind of hedging operation, a real hedging operation. I mean, hedging has a place, and that was turned then into a profit center. So it wasn't hedging anymore. It was using, you know, hedged bets, but basically to try to make profits in the market. And it's that kind of slide from, you know, conservative banking to, you know, let's take a lot of risk and, oh, gee, you know, it doesn't work out. So that's, you know, $2 billion here, $4 billion there. I mean, it starts to add up to real money. It's that problem in the banking system that we really still haven't dealt with, that you've got bankers who, you know, used to be conservative, who are now playing, you know, extremely risky games in the market with part of the financial system that really matters.
Okay. All right. I've got one last question for you.
Okay. Go ahead.
First of all, I want one thing. Your book, the most recent book, is still out there, right?
Well, I mean, you can find used copies. I think it's now, and there are electronic copies, but it's, you know, it was published in December 2008, so hard to find a, you know, a new copy. But if you go to Amazon, you can find it in one version or another.
Hey, I love your writing. You need to write another one, Jim. It's time for another book.
Yeah, all I need is another 24 hours a day. Thank you.
Okay, I'd like to ask one last question of everybody. What is keeping you up at night? What's the one thing that you worry about that you think that people are not getting a handle on or are not really paying enough attention to? What keeps you up at night?
You know, I've got a 17-year-old and a soon-to-be 11-year-old, and what keeps me up at night is, you know, what kind of future we're leaving to these kids or 25-year-olds or whatever. You know, I don't think we're paying enough attention to trying to make the world a little bit easier for these kids who, you know, if on current trend, are looking at a pretty tough road to hoe.
You know, and your writing, and I think your writing reflects that concern. One of the things I like about your writing is that you reflect your concern, I think, for your readers, and on behalf of your readers, I want to thank you for that.
Well, just
and
I want to thank keep on reading.
And I want to thank you for being on the show today. Thank you so much, Jim Joubak, folks. We're going to be back with you in just a few moments. Thanks, Jim. Back to you in just a few moments. You're listening to Mike Robinson, Straight Talk Money, Business 1110 KTK. Back to you in a minute.